Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm Chris Messini. Over the last two episodes, we heard the first two chapters of Madeline Miller's novel, Circe, which is this year's selection for Spokane Is Reading, a collaboration between the Spokane Public Library, Spokane County Libraries, and Auntie's Bookstore. The book is a reimagining of the story of a Greek goddess, banished from her godly peers, who discovers the power of witchcraft among the world of mortals and becomes a powerful sorceress. Tonight, we'll hear a conversation I had with Miller about the book in advance of her visit to Spokane. She'll be in town for two Spokane Is Reading events on Thursday, October 24th, 1 p.m. at the Spokane Valley Event Center and 7 p.m. at the downtown Spokane Public Library. Both events are open to the public. Madeline Miller, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So just to start things off, Circe is a goddess. She's a nymph who appears briefly in classic texts such as the Odyssey and Ovid's Metamorphoses, but she's definitely a minor character in those stories. So what initially drew you to her and made you want to imagine her as the hero of her own story?
Well, I was when I first encountered Circe, I encountered her in the Odyssey, and I was so tantalized by the portrait of her because she's a very unusual figure. She is a witch who turns men into pigs, and she also seems to wield a fair amount of power, even the type of power that makes the gods a little bit nervous. And she isn't punished for that by the end of her story, which is usually how powerful women end up in the Greek myths, punished for their power. So that drew me in. And I was also just really interested in sort of how she got to occupy that space, how she got to her island, how she learned witchcraft. And I was in particular interested in the fact that she has gotten such a bad reputation in later versions of her. She's often remembered as a villain. She's actually literally a villain in the Wonder Woman universe. She's one of Wonder Woman's nemeses, which I didn't know at the time that I was writing it, but is very much in line with how she's been remembered throughout medieval times and the Renaissance as sort of the man-hater, the spider at the center of the web. And that is actually not the Circe that Homer gives us, although Homer's portrait is very circumscribed and sort of very flattened, it still has more complexity than that. It includes really Circe not only as this frightening witch, but also as kind of a benevolent healer who helps Odysseus, and in fact is one of the most helpful characters that he encounters. So I love that that sort of grayness of her character was in the original, and I was looking to kind of dig deeper into her story.
You tell her story from her own voice. It's a first-person perspective. So, and you really give her her own very particular voice and characterization. So was that important to you to tell it from her perspective rather than, the traditional sort of omniscient narrator of an epic?
Absolutely. And in particular, it felt important because the episode in the Odyssey, although it is that omniscient narrator, the Circe episode itself is narrated by Odysseus. He's actually telling the story as he's sort of staying with the Phaeacians, who are a group of people who are hosting him and giving him hospitality. And so it felt like there was sort of this double hiddenness to Circe's story. For one thing, her story was being told in the male heroic tradition, epic, but also it was being filtered through Odysseus's perspective in particular. And Odysseus, of course, is the great liar of ancient literature, so we should definitely not believe anything he has to say. So I really sort of wanted to give primacy to her voice. And I feel that there are so many voices from the ancient world and from history in general that have been silenced, women, slaves. And so it feels really important to let these characters speak for themselves.
Well, I definitely want to get back to that because that idea of sort of silenced voices, I think, is really important. But first, just getting back to her voice, would you be willing to read a short section of Circe for us so we can sort of get the sound of her voice?
Sure. So this section comes from towards the middle of the novel after Circe has already started turning men into pigs. Odysseus asked me once, why pigs? We were seated before my hearth in our usual chairs. He liked the one draped in cowhide with silver inlaid in its carvings. Sometimes he would rub the scrolling absently beneath his thumb. Why not? I said. He gave me a bare smile. I mean it, I would like to know. I knew he meant it. He was not a pious man, but the seeking out of things hidden. This was his highest worship. There were answers in me. I felt them, buried deep as last year's bulbs growing fat. Their roots tangled with those moments I had spent against the wall, when my lions were gone, and my spells shut up inside me. After I changed a crew, I would watch them scrabbling and crying in the sty, falling over each other, stupid with their horror. They hated it all, their newly voluptuous flesh, their delicate split trotters, their swollen bellies dragging in the earth's muck. It was a humiliation, a debasement. They were sick with longing for their hands, those appendages men use to mitigate the world. Some I would say to them, it's not that bad. You should appreciate a pig's advantages. Mud slick and swift, they are hard to catch. Low to the ground, they cannot easily be knocked over. They are not like dogs. They do not need your love. They can thrive anywhere, on anything, scraps and trash. They look witless and dull, which lulls their enemies, but they are clever. They will remember your face. They never listened. The truth is, men make terrible pigs.
That was Madeline Miller reading from her novel, Circe, which is this year's selection for Spokane Is Reading. So I'm glad you chose to read from that section because it segues perfectly into what we were just talking about, which is that both in Circe and in your first novel, Song of Achilles, the stories that you choose to highlight and make the center of those novels are the ones that are left out of history and myth. So the homosexual relationship in your first book, female heroes in this book. And in particular, Circe came out last year sort of in the height of the Me Too movement. And that passage in particular seems particularly relevant because she's changing these men into pigs, not just for no reason, but because they're her assaulters. So even though your novels are fiction, why do you think it's important to really highlight those narratives that are left out and empower those voices?
Well, I think, you know, as the novelist Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie talks about in a really moving way, you know, there's this danger of the single story, that if we only have one version of a history, of a myth, we are not getting the full picture. And that one version then becomes sort of objective truth, and we take it to be the truth when we're just getting the smallest little kind of pinprick view. And so I think this is where we need to be welcoming in the voices that have been, you know, silenced in history, which are, as I said, women, minorities, all those voices that have been kind of pushed to the margins. And so in a story like the Iliad or the Odyssey, you know, these are epic works. And because they're epic works, they are associated with the most important part of society for the ancient Greek world, which is men. And so they are concerned almost exclusively with traditionally male things, things like warfare, inheritance, vengeance. And women, although they appear here and there, often very tantalizingly like Circe, their stories are there really to serve the male hero. And so I really wanted to push back against that and to sort of allow Circe to stand at the center of the story. You know, she's a cameo in the Odyssey. So Odysseus is, in turn, a cameo in this story. You know, it was important that the whole story not be the year that he's on her island. What interested me is who is Circe outside of that myth?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that Odysseus makes a cameo, because That, for me, was one of the real pleasures of reading Circe, is that, you know, I'm by no means a classical scholar, but just because these myths are so pervasive in Western culture, the characters that we're familiar with show up in this book in really fun ways. So obviously there's Odysseus, Hermes plays an important role. We get to see the Minotaur and several other myths and characters that people are probably somewhat familiar with get their own reimaginings and retellings from Circe's perspective. So what is it about these stories and characters that you think gives them the staying power that they have, that we're able to enjoy them time and time again in different iterations?
I think a lot of it has to do with what you were talking about before when you brought up the Me Too movement, which is that I think that a lot of these stories are rooted in sort of timeless human emotions. And, you know, culture has changed and technology has certainly changed, but humanity has really not changed. We still make terrible mistakes. We still make very noble, you know, sacrifices. We get angry. We grieve. We love. Sometimes people ask me, you know, how do you make the myth so relevant? And I always feel like I don't have to do anything. I feel like it's all, you know, it's all there. It's just sort of opening it up a little bit so you can see it. I mean, I think, unfortunately, I was writing the novel before the Me Too movement, but it was amazing to be in final edits and having a lot of the stories breaking and be working on a scene and then look at the news and it's the same thing. You know, we're still dealing with the same things. We have made some progress in terms of women, but I think we still have a long way to go. You know, women are still being silenced, abused, undermined, belittled, kept from the halls of power, all these things that Circe and women in the ancient world struggled with, you know, we struggle with today. I think for me, the difference is that we are finally getting more of those voices. You know, in the ancient world, we have basically one female voice, which is Sappho. All the other stories are, you know, composed by or written by men.
And I think that is what makes your novel so powerful, is that it does feel totally relevant. Her voice and the struggles that she's dealing with feel very modern, even though they're in an ancient context. Although the one part that I think is particularly interesting that maybe is less relatable is, like a lot of these classical Greek myths, there's a lot that has to do with the interaction and the tension between the world of gods and the world of mortals. And Circe in particular is fascinated by mortals, and she becomes really attached to them in a way that very few of her fellow gods and goddesses are. And she also specializes in transformation, so there's some movement back and forth without giving away too much between those worlds. And so thinking about them as literary characters, what makes that sort of tension between mortals and gods so interesting, and why do we find that relevant?
Well, first of all, that tension for me is actually was born from a close reading of Homer, which is that in the Odyssey, Homer describes her as a goddess who speaks like a human, which, you know, it's one word in the Greek, speaking like a human. And it really captivated me because it set her right at that border between humanity and divinity, that, you know, what does it mean to be born a god, but to have this piece of you that belongs to the mortal world. So psychologically, and as a novelist, immediately I'm saying, you know, this person is an outcast. They wouldn't have the ability to speak like the thunderbolt, you know, or like, you know, great rumbling rocks the way Poseidon or Zeus or these other gods can speak. One of the things that I am interested in is a number of psychological studies that have come out in the past couple of decades about what happens to people when they have so much power and so much privilege that they basically are completely walled off from any consequences for their behavior. And it turns out, based on these psychological studies, that is terrible for people. That what happens if you have no consequences is that you start to sort of think that you deserve to be above everybody. I must be here because I earned it. Everybody else who isn't here, they're down there because they didn't earn it. And what happens is your empathy starts to drop. And it's possible to fight against that if you, you know, are aware of it. But if you're not aware of it, that's kind of what naturally happens. And so for me, the gods are the ultimate iteration of that. They have no empathy. They are only interested in themselves, their own desires. You know, if we're really going to get psychological, we would call them sociopathic narcissists. You know, they will punish anybody who crosses them, who attacks them. And really, they, you know, only care about their own whims. They're capricious. They're petty. And they have no empathy. And so for me, that idea of Circe speaking like a human, that was actually, you know, that implied empathy for me, that she has an ability that other gods don't have to feel with other people, to feel for other people. And I have always felt that empathy is humanity's greatest saving grace. So I that's something that I'm always thinking about as I'm writing.
That's so fascinating that you think of that on sort of like a psychological level. What jumped out to me was more on just sort of like a storytelling level, that if you're just telling stories about gods and goddesses, it's inherently it's a comedy. Nobody dies. And if you have a story about mortals, or even if you throw them in, then the ending is known. Like every mortal is a tragic character because they're eventually going to die. And so that makes them more interesting on some level because they deal with all of the things that tragic characters have to deal with.
Yeah, and one thing about the gods is, as you say, they can't die. But within the world of the Greek gods are very hierarchical. And so you have sort of, you know, at the top you have gods like Zeus and Hera and Poseidon, and they're the ones who are, you know, it is kind of like a farce, life among the gods, because there are no consequences. But then you sort of get down to where Circe is, and she is the lowest of the low. She's the bottom of the barrel in terms of divine power. She's a nymph. And in the Greek stories, nymphs are the ones that are being abused, given to husbands they don't want to marry. They have very little agency or control over their own lives. They are pretty much treated as pawns or else as prey. And so even within the world of the gods, the Greek gods, I felt like there was still room to slip out of that farce, because there's kind of these underclass of gods who also suffer. And, you know, they're basically, nymphs are so close to humans that you sometimes, except for their immortality, you almost can't see the line.
Obviously, you have a deep background and understanding of the classics. You have degrees, multiple degrees in classics, and spent your pre-novelist life teaching ancient languages and classics. Is that right?
Yes.
So I'm curious about your writing process for these books, given that background. How much research do you do while you're writing, and how much does that sort of like academic understanding of these texts, and like how close do you feel like you have to stick to that kind of outline versus how much you're able to let your imagination just determine what happens to these characters?
I'm very grateful for my academic background. At the same time that I was studying classics and pursuing degrees in it, I was also writing on the side, and I was writing purely contemporary fiction. And then at some point I had sort of an epiphany, and I realized, oh my gosh, I could be writing about classics, that the things that I want to say about certain pieces of classics, I don't want to prove them. I want to, you know, present them in a novel form. And at first, I felt some tension there for sure, exactly as you talk about, that it made me a little bit nervous. Am I blaspheming? Is the classics community going to hate what I'm doing? Are the classics police going to come to my house and take me away? So I worried about that a lot. And I eventually sort of came to get over it. I think Song of Achilles helped to break me of that, which was my first novel. So by the time I got to Circe, I was excited to push back and change things and, you know, shift things up. But I always rely on my academic background as well, because I like to write very close to the original texts. I like to be constantly drawing things from Homer and sort of feeling like I'm in dialogue with Homer, that I'm, you know, speaking back to him. And so I really use my academic background for that. Whenever I get stuck, I always read, I either go back to the original or I read secondary sources. I read scholars arguing about, you know, the text, which is very inspiring for me. And then I use my research background also just to help, you know, with finding a lot of things about creating the world. So things like ancient weaving. I didn't know a lot about ancient weaving, but because I have sort of a classics background, I kind of knew where to get that information. And ancient loom technology, all the sort of items that show up in the course of the novel, for the most part, they are based on actual artifacts that we have from Mycenaean or Minoan Bronze Age finds. So it's little things like that sort of that help me create the world and the objects of the world and the way the world works. So I'm at this point very, very grateful, and I really don't feel tension between my academic background and my writing side. I feel like they work together.
So as you mentioned, Circe is your second book that reimagines mythological Greek characters. What's next? Are you planning to write more books in this tradition, or are you branching out, or what are you working on now?
So right now I'm working on a short story about Pandora, which, speaking of timeless myths that are eternally relevant, this is the story of the woman who opens the box and is blamed for all the evils of mankind because she was too curious. But I'm also interested in the Aeneid. That's the other sort of great ancient epic. It's the Roman epic. I have always loved it. And Virgil, I think, is the great humanist of the ancient world. And so I love working within his stories. And the Aeneid tells the story of the Trojan refugees who are escaping from the ruins, the burnt ruins of Troy. So it's a very powerful work.
And there's also rumors of a miniseries HBO adaptation of Circe's. Are there any behind-the-scenes teasers you can tell us about that project?
So, yes, it is true. HBO Max has bought 8 episodes for a first season. And I am really excited, but I am not particularly involved. I think that, you know, I don't know anything at all about TV or turning a novel into a TV series. So I'm very happy to leave it to the pros. But I feel really, really good about the people who have the work, both the writers and the producers and everyone involved. I thought a lot about making sure I wanted to put it in the right hands, and I feel like they really understand the work. And so I'm excited to see what they do with it.
So just sort of in closing, Circe is this year's selection for Spokane is Reading, which is an initiative that just tries to get as many people in town to read the same book and spark conversations about it. And it's like a citywide book club. So what do you hope readers in that sort of big communal way can learn or take away from your novel?
Well, first of all, I feel like it's the ultimate thrill for a writer to have so many people in a community thinking about your work. So thank you, first of all. But I would love for readers to feel that they belong in these stories and that they belong thinking about these stories. I have definitely noticed that Greek mythology is one of those things that some people love it. I feel like Rick Riordan and the Percy Jackson series has brought a huge number of people to it, but that a lot of people feel very alienated from it. They feel alienated from, you know, whether it's feeling like I can't pronounce the names, or just feeling like that's for a particular group of people that's elitist or uninteresting or not relevant. And in the ancient world, Homer, the Iliad, the Odyssey, these came out of oral tradition, and they were stories that were told, you know, around the fire, passed down from grandparents to grandchildren. And so they really belong to everybody. And so part of my passion is sharing these stories with everybody and sort of saying they do belong to everybody. And you don't need a special education or a special background. They're there for everyone.
Well, I've been talking with Madeline Miller, author of Circe, which is this year's Spokane is Reading selection. She'll be at Spokane for two free Spokane is Reading events on Thursday, October 24th, 1 p.m. at the Spokane Valley Event Center and 7 p.m. at the downtown Spokane Public Library. Madeline Miller, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me. I look forward to coming.
You've been listening to The Bookshelf from Spokane Public Radio. If you missed the first two chapters of Madeline Miller's novel, Circe, read for The Bookshelf by Kate Vita, you can find them on our website, spokanepublicradio.org, or on The Bookshelf podcast. Tomorrow on The Bookshelf, it's part three of Pivot, Spokane's live storytelling series from May 2019. Next week, we'll hear more Pivot stories from the October 10th event, when the theme was Full Circle, plus a special Halloween edition of The Bookshelf on Thursday, October 31st. Then, beginning Monday, November 4th, we'll begin a new book, Letters of a Woman Homesteader, real letters written by Eleanor Pruitt Stewart, a single mother who homesteaded in Wyoming in the early 20th century. Letters of a Woman Homesteader will be read for The Bookshelf by Mary Jo Rudolph. Thanks for listening. For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Massini.